Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth here with you. John Vecchione's in court this week, and Peggy Little has stayed over a second segment to continue talking about the First Amendment and some of the problems that we have with the way that the administrative state deals with the First Amendment. And in this particular segment, we're going to talk about a case that this is a cert petition that NCLA has pending at the U.S. Supreme Court. The case is Faulkner v. Nazarian. And the issue here is really qualified immunity around First Amendment protected speech. And so we filed this cert petition. Rhode Island College is the defendant. And I believe Mr. Nazarian's the president, if I remember correctly, of Rhode Island College, or was at the appropriate time. And the college waived its response, much like you were talking about in the past segment in the Musk case with SEC. And the court ordered a response from the college. And so the college responded. And now it's, we will be, by the time this show airs, we may have filed a response brief, or if not, it's going to be filed in very short order. And the particular, just to refresh the recollection of our listeners here, the particular issue here is that Mr. Faulkner was a student at Rhode Island College in the social work program. And he's a conservative individual with conservative views and was repeatedly being asked to do things that were inconsistent with his views, including things like lobbying the state legislature and things like that for policies and programs that he didn't agree with. And so he objected to that, and he was dismissed from the social work program, essentially for viewpoint-based reasons. That issue went up to the Rhode Island Supreme Court on whether or not his First Amendment rights had been violated. And the Rhode Island Supreme Court found that, yes, in fact, his First Amendment rights had been violated, that this was First Amendment protected activity on his part. So then it sent the issue back down for trial. And then Rhode Island raised the issue of sovereign immunity. I guess Rhode Island College must be, not sovereign immunity, qualified immunity. And that made it all the way back up to the Supreme Court as well. And the lower courts decided that, yes, there is qualified immunity. And what that means is that when you're trying to sue a state official for depriving you of your constitutional rights, there has to be, under Supreme Court precedent, there has to be a sort of on-point case showing that the rights that you were deprived of are rights that you really have, and that it would be a violation to deprive you of them. And this is a problem because often there isn't a particular case on point with the same fact pattern on all fours as whatever happened to you. And here, in fact, I don't know if we've shared this with the audience before, Peggy, but as I was reviewing some of our papers here, I was reminded that someone had actually told Mr. Faulkner, until a court rules and says we can't do this, we're going to keep doing it.
Indeed.
So this qualified immunity is just, it's almost like a blank check for the violation of constitutional rights.
Absolutely. And for your listeners, general concern about how our state institutions of higher education treat tuition-paying students, this is a topic of great concern. I came across recently a quote from Barry Weiss, who writes a lot about these issues of what is acceptable to say and not say on college campuses. And in one speech she gave, she said, maybe instead of writing a paper with an argument you believe in, she's saying this to students,
right,
you've been pressured at the risk of a low grade or worse to write the paper repeating the argument you know your teacher or professor wants to hear. Maybe you feel afraid to speak up in class, a privilege for which you or your parents pay many thousands of dollars for fear of enraging the mob. And this is what happened. Mr. Faulkner is an unusual conservative libertarian student.
And he's particularly unusual in Rhode Island, I suspect.
He's that guy, the guy that would say, no, I think that the lobbying you want me to do, which is to expand welfare benefits, actually hurts recipients. The kind of social work I want to do is work on behalf of getting people off of welfare and into productive lives. that's a very legitimate goal.
That's a fantastic goal for a social worker to have.
Indeed. And he had partnered with certain public policy institutions in Rhode Island to try to advance that point of view. And he was basically said, you and your views are not welcome here. He was compelled to withdraw his proposals and required to follow the ones his instructors had set. So this is about as clear a case of viewpoint discrimination as you could ever want to get. And that was recognized in litigation below by the Rhode Island Supreme Court, which is what makes this a particularly interesting cert petition, because you have that recognition.
Well, it makes it a great vehicle, because a lot of times with these cases, they don't reach that question. And so it's speculative. If the court were to peel back the qualified immunity, it's speculative whether your rights were really violated or not. And the courts don't like to do that typically, because they don't like to sort of rule on things that may not be relevant. But here, it's already been adjudicated that his First Amendment rights were violated. And so the only thing in the way is this qualified immunity ruling. It's a fantastic vehicle for that reason. And the other thing that I really like about this case, Peggy, and that we've teed up for the Supreme Court, is to say, fine, if you don't want to get rid of qualified immunity in its entirety, what about at least carving it back in these contexts where you have a desk-bound officer who has all the time in the world to reflect, to seek legal counsel before violating someone's First Amendment rights? I get the fact that a cop on the beat might be making split-second life or death decisions, and there might be a role for qualified immunity there. But there aren't any split-second life or death decisions on dismissing a student from campus, from a program. And so you could pare back qualified immunity in these contexts.
Absolutely. And it would be a wonderful check on the current reign of wokeness and of political correctness at various institutions of higher education, which should be a matter of concern to everyone. The very fact that his instructor said, until we have a court tell us otherwise, you march to our tune. That's a frightening power to give to school administrators who are being paid on your tax dollar to provide education. And Mr. Faulkner's views were not extreme or, somehow, incorrect for other reasons. They were perfectly reasonable concerns that his goal was to get people off welfare. The school's goal is to expand those benefits. I think that's a legitimate, honest debate that should be taking place robustly on our campuses, yeah. Not something that people get booted out for voicing.
Well, and certainly you might have a different situation in a private college or university where the First Amendment doesn't apply. But if you're dealing with a public college or university, students have First Amendment protection for the expression of these views. And to Barry Weiss's point, I think you'd have a hard case to make if you were trying to sue a professor over a bad grade or something and say, you're suppressing my views. But this one is pretty clear cut. I mean, they kicked him out of the program, and they kicked him out of the program because of his views. That seems to me to be kind of not debatable.
And we had a state Supreme Court justices that recognized there's a First Amendment problem here. And that is another reason why this is an excellent petition, because, as you say, this is not just a potential possible maybe violation. It is recognized as one. It's a very clear record that he was discriminated against for his viewpoint and for the content of his speech. And that's what the First Amendment forbids.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the other thing that is, I think, relevant here, if I remember correctly, is that there's been some recent scholarship suggesting that maybe when the court ruled originally on some of these qualified immunity things, the statute wasn't codified completely or correctly, or there's at least some evidence that this. The court created this qualified immunity doctrine based on maybe something that hasn't been fully explored in the academic literature.
Yeah, it's a technical point. I'm not sure we need to go into it completely with your readers, but essentially, when Congress passed this statute, They were providing for robust protections of the civil rights and civil liberties of Americans. And then when the U.S. Code got codified, there were changes probably inadvertently made that changed the tenor of the statute. And recent scholarship suggests that if the statute is construed as it originally was meant to be construed, there would be a cause of action here for Mr. Faulkner.
Yeah, and so that might be something else that would attract the justices' attention, the fact that, I mean, this is a more textualist court. The court that invented qualified immunity was a less textualist court, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, there are maybe stare decisis considerations in play, although one of our arguments is that the doctrine of stare decisis does not justify continued acceptance of the atextual, clearly established law standard of qualified immunity. And so that's something that would be debatable on the merits here. But I do think that the court might be interested in looking at what was the original meaning of the text that Congress passed here with Section 1983.
Especially in the context where these professors or administrators do have the ability to make their decisions after speaking with the counsel for the university. You know, can I really do this, dismiss someone because of his point of view? Do I get to tell him what his thesis should be? Normally, students in a master's program pick an area of their concern that they want to write on and get a degree on. And so the way he was treated really departs from several norms that should be corrected.
Absolutely. Hopefully this is something the U.S. Supreme Court will take an interest in. I would love for the court to grant cert in this case, and we'll keep you informed if and when that happens. Thanks, Peggy, so much for being with us to talk about the Faulkner v. Nazarian case.
Thank you, Mark.